Go behind the wheel and under the hood on everything automotive with high-speed stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Scott Benjamin, the auto editor here at HowStuffWorks.com, and I'm joined by Ben Porkchop Bolin. How's it going, Ben?
It's going pretty well, man. You've discovered my, I guess you've been looking into my reputation. Yep.
Wait. I just came up with Porkchop because it was someone at a local racetrack that I used to go to. I thought you might, you might protest.
Oh, no. In that case, I misspoke, and I was, you know what? Let's completely change the subject.
No. It's either pork chop or chops. What do you want?
Oh, chops.
Chops?
Oh, pork chop is fine, but chops is awesome.
I kind of like the ring of pork chop. Ben, pork chop bowling. But
it's cool,
it's
yeah.
cool over a loud, maybe like an, you know, speaker
yeah.
or something.
Yeah, oh, yeah, in an arena.
Like, in an arena, that'd
yeah,
be cool.
With
We're not
things.
In an arena, though, so maybe chops. I can call you chops.
Call me chops here mm-hmm. when it's just... our listeners and the rest of the How Stuff Works family.
Well, what was the one you were going to have before? It could be Chops and the Deuce.
Chops and the Deuce.
That's right.
That's a radio show.
Chops and the Deuce here with High Speed Stuff.
You know what? We're gonna wait on our listeners to respond to that. And before they do, I want to change the subject completely just for a second.
Okay.
All right. I like that, though. Okay, so... On Thanksgiving, the 26th of November, coming up this year, maybe you've heard about this phenomenon of Punkin' Chunkin'.
Maybe a little.
Oh, yeah. You guys should see the grin he has right now.
I'm wearing a Punkin' Chunkin' shirt right now.
I know. It's very strange.
Yeah.
I was going to...
No, not really. Not really.
I mean, it's not really strange, but...
No, and I'm not really wearing a shirt.
Oh, sure. Whatever.
A Punkin' Chunkin' shirt.
It's too late now. Yeah. But it's also... This is also a television show. It's also a series of television shows.
Yep. It's... well, there's two of them, really, on Thanksgiving night. There's the Road to Punkin' Chunkin' at 8, and then Punkin' Chunkin' at 9. So you can watch a full evening of Punkin' Chunkin' again if you want.
On the Science Channel.
On the Science Channel. Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
So, yeah, that's it. Now, I think we should move into our topic today.
You know what? I think you're right. I'm feeling this pork chop thing, man.
I look like I may have... I've actually taken you by surprise by this.
You did. You did. You made my day.
Honestly, you've kind of foiled it, though, because you did have the big pork chop sideburns for a while.
I did, yeah.
And that was kind of the origin of it. And then I thought, wait a minute, I knew that racer by that name, too.
Yeah.
This is going to work.
Yeah.
And then you got a haircut and a shave this weekend.
I know.
And it's gone.
I had to clean up, man.
But I still want to call you Chops.
That's good. Yeah, I'll grow some out, man.
Okay.
But also, I will try to catch you by surprise, and I don't think it's going to work. But it's a good question. It's a fundamental question that needs to be asked. For any kind of automobile show, why is the U.S. so reliant on cars, Scott?
Well, it's... Okay, that's there's a little bit complex. We can get into it. It won't take very long, I promise. But we've definitely got a system set up where we're extremely reliant on cars because we've moved out of the cities. And that's kind of the key to this whole thing is that people began to move out of the cities around the, around the turn of the century, the 19th century. People began to kind of stretch their legs and get out into the farmland, but still work in the city. And they were able to do that because there were forms of public transportation to get to and from, you know, different, maybe a bus depot, or maybe it was a train depot, or maybe it was streetcars even that would take them out to the kind of the outer reaches of the city. And, of course, the automobile. So the automobile came... prevalent, I guess, in the United States, anyways, right around 1900. I mean, that was about when it was early on. You know, there are very few of them there, but or here rather. But for maybe the past 20 years before that, even they were kind of the idea was kind of spreading and germinating all over the world, and eventually everybody kind of caught up and became kind of just an efficient, not a very efficient way, but an exciting way to get around. A lot of people bought into it.
And also with the emergence of assembly lines and all the mass production, the innovations in mass production that happened, it lowered the price point of automobiles to the point where somebody could realistically afford one.
Oh, definitely. Hit it right on the head. The Model T is what probably comes to most people's mind, and that's really kind of the origin of all this, really, is the Model T. The Model T, between 1900 and 1915, Let's just back this up. I don't mean just the Model T, but just automobiles in general.
Okay.
From 1900 to 1915, we went from approximately 8,000 cars in the United States to over 2 million cars in the United States. So in 15 years, we gained, what is that? Boy, 190, well, whatever.
More than a million.
yeah, that's right. 1,992,000 cars were I guess, between those years. So Henry Ford and his Model T in 1908, I guess from 1908 to 1927, mm-hmm. He built 15, not he himself, but the company built,
yes,
15 million Ford Model Ts within that time frame. So you can imagine what the roads look like at that time. I mean, and that's just Ford.
Yeah.
There's other manufacturers doing the same thing. Remember we talked about there were hundreds of car manufacturers at this time.
Right.
Literally hundreds, and they only, you know, some of them only made a few vehicles, but still, you're talking about a lot of competition. Finally, you know, the big three emerged, and you know, here in the United States, anyways, and they kind of remained as the main players. But cars just the popularity just exploded, mm-hmm. and so you can imagine that, you know, from 1908 to 1927, there was also a lot of building of roads, a lot of improvement of roads, and a lot of just advancements in that.
Yeah, like the interstate system.
Yeah, the interstate system, yeah. And the big move for the interstate system came in, a little bit later, but by the 1920s.
Sure.
Now, even though there's all these vehicles on the road, the Model T was, you know, the cost was down, like you had mentioned, and it was pretty much accessible to everybody, really.
Yeah.
By the 1920s, most people in the United States in the cities were using trolleys or streetcars to get around. And that's still because they were pretty much centralized in the cities. Mm-hmm. And they were able to do that. This public transportation system that we had, believe it or not, I mean, looking at it now, you'd never guess this, but it was actually a pretty elaborate system of mm-hmm. trolleys and streetcars and even subways that were beginning to develop. So there's a lot of transport, you know, public transportation going on that maybe a lot of people don't know about even now, because you would have to look really hard, if at all, to be able to find even traces of these streetcars existing in a lot of cities.
I'm going to advance something here, because mm-hmm. When you talk about public transportation in cities, you know, that's a sore point, because there are many groups of people who believe that public transportation in urban areas should be non-existent or should be much more elaborate today, or believe that there is some sort of active or there was at some point some sort of active plan to stop it. You know, that that film that came out years ago, Who Killed the Electric Trolley, mm-hmm. or Who Killed the Electric Streetcar?
Nope, that was Who Killed the Electric Car. Is that what you're talking about, or are you talking about another one?
There's one that alleges that one of the big three purchased the municipal electric public transportation system to kill it. But, you know, it doesn't, like most of those stories. Yeah.
That's true.
Oh, okay. You think it's true.
Yeah, it's true.
Wow, that is
the Great American Streetcar Scandal.
I can't believe I've just totally switched sides with the deuce here. This is crazy. Usually I'm the one.
No. I've read about it. I've just read about it.
For sure. Well,
history,
you weren't there. You're not.
No, I wasn't,
you're a young
there.
Guy.
But I mean, there's court documents. I mean, I can get into this real quickly here.
Sure, yeah.
But there are court documents at the end of this that proved that something was going on, and they were actually found guilty.
Oh,
if that
they
proves
were
anything,
convicted.
Well, yeah, that gives any kind of credibility to it.
That does give it a little bit.
I guess it would. Yeah. I mean, I haven't personally sought out these mm-hmm. These terms of this settlement, but
right.
I can tell you when we get to the end here what they were fined.
You want to save it till the end?
Oh, just to the very, I mean, just, I'm talking like a 15-second or 20-second wrap up here. But, all right, so in the 1920s, a group called the National City Lines Incorporated were formed or organized. Uh-huh. And the group was made up of some of the big, I guess, transportation-based players mm-hmm. of the day, General Motors, Firestone, Standard Oil of California, Phillips Petroleum, and there were others as well. So some of these big corporations were involved in this. Yeah, that's right. And the idea was that they would purchase transit companies, and they would, here's what, this is pretty bad. They would immediately halt the electric rail service when they purchased this company. They'd immediately stop service. They would dismantle the entire system, junk the cars, pull up the tracks and all the electricity or electric lines that ran for the tracks, and then replace these lines with GM buses. So that's the rub there, is that they would replace it with bus transportation, which they were involved in because, you know, you've got petroleum manufacturing, you know, Firestone, which is a rubber company.
Yeah.
Still is. And you got GM, who's making the buses, of course. Mm-hmm. They're interested. And you've got the petroleum companies, you know, Phillips and Standard Oil. Of course they're interested in it because they're talking internal combustion engines and, you know, other lubricants, things like that to keep this thing going. So anyways, by the end of this, which I don't know when that was exactly, I guess in the late 40s, they had purchased 100, more than 100 electric streetcar systems.
Systems, complete
systems they had purchased in 45 different cities in the United States. So you're talking like New York, Detroit, Philadelphia, Cleveland, L.A., Tulsa, big cities.
Yeah.
And then in 1949, in Illinois court, in I think it was Northern Illinois, they actually convicted NCL, which was the National City Lines, of trying to conspiracy to monopolize the sale of buses, and so they were convicted of conspiracy of this monopoly, and the fine, get this, the fine.
Yeah.
$5,000 for the corporations and $1 each for each of the executives involved in this.
Oh, man.
I know. Slap on the wrist.
I mean, I know a dollar was a lot more back then.
Yeah, not even a slap on the wrist. And I have a photo here to show you, which a lot of people can search out, but take a look at that photo. And that that is a pile of streetcars. There's probably 40 of them there, if I had to guess, or 30 something.
It's a pile of electric streetcars. They stack three rows. It's three rows high, and it's about it's about 12 or 15 per row.
Yeah, yeah. It's a huge pack of them, and they're stacked up like cordwood or something.
Yeah,
and they're just left there to decay. And those are the kind that, you know, you see in cities now, like Louisiana. They run the original streetcars, there's trolleys in that city, and San Francisco's
got them.
San Francisco got a lot of really cool streetcars. I've been on those before. But anyways, it's a shame to see something like this, and that's just one. That's clearly from one city because they're all the same type of streetcar here,
they're all the same color,
same line,
same make.
Now imagine that 100 times over throughout 45 different cities.
So, like the passenger pigeon, the streetcar was hunted. Well, I guess the passenger pigeon is extinct.
I mean,
that's so interesting, Scott. I totally thought you were going to tell me to put my tinfoil hat on.
No. In this case, there's photographic evidence and there's court documents that back this up, and just historical information that says, it happened. I don't know. It'd be interesting to really dig into it deeper and find out exactly what went on there because, you know, there's always another side to it.
Yeah, but, that's true.
But really, that's kind of, I believe that is where our reliance comes from, is that, you know, this removal of the mass transportation that was available before, and now, you know, we're suddenly reliant on buses. And then, of course, people said, well, you know, I don't want to take the bus, you know, might as well get my own car if it's this cheap. And
and the buses are all closed down anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
I've got, you know what, I agree with you on that, but I don't want to paint car companies or the former executives of car companies in a completely bad light, because I would also advance, you know, we've got a lot of listeners internationally outside of the U.S., and that's something a lot of people who don't live in the U.S. wonder, you know, why is this country so reliant on cars? That, I think, is definitely part of that, but also we have to consider just the sheer size of the United States. At what point, even if we had all that public transportation still around in municipal areas, maybe we would have started to connect things like D.C. and Connecticut and Boston. You probably have better transit there. But some places, you know, like it's very difficult to think that we could, by this time, have a network of high-speed rail lines that go across that distance, just because of, you know, as we said before, there is a cost involved.
Yeah, there is. And, you know, the systems that we're talking about, the ones that were dismantled, were electric streetcars and trolleys. They're not really long distance travel type vehicles. I mean, we would have had to have built up a system before this that was a high speed rail system, or even a rail system to begin with, where, you know, it could be adapted to high speed. You're not going to get on a trolley and ride from San Francisco to New York.
Yeah,
I mean, not yet.
You're right.
It's an open car. It's a long ride. It would be a slow long ride. We do have a great highway system.
Yeah,
and we do owe that to, we owe that to is the Interstate Highway Act that Eisenhower signed in 1956,
the
I believe
it was.
The
father of the Interstate Highway System.
Yeah, and what's cool about this is that it gave us, and I like this, is that we were able to build 42,500 miles of interstate in our country based on this act and the amount of government money that was put towards this act. Now, what that did, though, unfortunately, was that took away money from public transportation. In fact, at the same time that was being done, we were spending less than 1% on public transportation at the same time. Mm-hmm. So you can see the disparity there between public transportation and what it was valued at that time and what it was, I guess what we valued at that time, which was building the roads and getting those in line. And now we spend, a lot of money to keep for the upkeep and repair of those roads and even adding roads. And still, we still have very little money that goes towards public transportation.
Yeah.
But I don't get me wrong. I love the highway system. I love my car. I love driving. Yeah. You know that. So, yeah. I don't mean to speak ill of anybody in that.
Right.
I guess that organization, even way back then, it's just simply what happened. That's all.
Yeah. It's just it's just a fact. And even more important in the future is the bigger question becomes not so much why is the U.S. reliant on cars, but will the U.S. be reliant on cars in the future, given the increasing likelihood of instability in oil supplies and the fact that developing countries are using more resources? We very well, as a country, may be dragged kicking and screaming into the age of widespread public transportation.
Hmm. You think so, huh?
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems the only reason I disagree is because that I see a lot of these upstart companies like Aptera and Fisker, and I'm trying to think of some of the other ones. But a lot of these little companies that are starting to develop vehicles that are very efficient. We've talked about this in the past. Yeah. So I won't go into details on that, but I do see a lot of burgeoning car companies starting to make inroads. They're buying factories that were owned by GM. Fisker, I believe, bought a building that was owned by GM for manufacturing.
Did
and
they?
they're gonna manufacture the Fisker in that building now.
Man, so you love that Fisker.
I actually do. I think it's gonna have a cool car. But anyways, I see a lot of the individual transportation still happening.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't. Maybe it's just where we are. I just don't see a whole lot of public transportation being built right now. I know that in certain cities you're seeing, monorail systems and maybe a slight increase, but right now we're not seeing any of the big cross-country high-speed rail stuff being built. So I don't know. I'm still iffy.
So to sum it up, why is the U.S. so reliant on cars? One, there is a lot of ground to cover. Two, there was a concerted effort to make cars more popular in the United States. Sound good?
Very good.
And so where we are now, I think you know, listener mail. Okay, Scott, do you want to do the honors?
I do. Yep, I've got a letter here from Dean. Dean mentions, and he's got a correction for us here, which we welcome.
We love corrections.
Yeah. I actually do. Says, I'd like to correct you on something that was mentioned in the podcast I listened to, he says today. He said that there were no planes that could hover and go backwards like a helicopter.
Oh, yeah.
After being in the Royal Air Force for 22 years and seeing the Harrier do both, I would question that. In fact, I used to work with a Harrier squadron and have seen them hover and land in hides in the middle of some of the woods. Oh, yes, it can also stop and bow to the crowd if needed.
That's awesome.
That is awesome. And he is exactly right. I forgot about the capabilities of the Harrier.
Yep.
The Harrier jet, which can, it's a vertical takeoff jet. And it is extremely flexible that way that it can hover. And I have seen it bow to the crowd at an air show that I went to.
You've actually seen it?
That's cool. A long time ago. It's been a long time, but I've seen it happen before. And he's exactly right. So, Dean, I appreciate that. And
thank you, Dean.
If you catch us on something like that in the future, anybody, please write in and tell us. We like to, we read both sides, good and bad.
We're good sports.
Yeah, that's right, we are.
Yeah, we try. We're not perfect, but no. But we do try.
No.
And we love hearing from everybody. I've got one here, Scott.
Okay.
John from Tacoma, Washington writes in, and he was talking about, remember how we did the piece on survival kits?
I do.
Yeah, he mentioned also road flares in survival kits. For anybody, any of our listeners assembling one today, he said they burn for up to an hour at 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Not only can they be used to signal for help, but they can also be used to start a fire. He helpfully notes you probably shouldn't use them inside the car.
3,000 degrees? Does it say 3,000?
It does say 3,000 degrees.
Wow. Wow, I had no idea that they were that hot.
I did not either.
Wow.
Actually, he really caught me on that. I don't have any road flares.
You know what? I don't think I do either. And 3,000 degrees. I just had no idea. That's blown me away. But that's a great idea.
Yeah, it is a great idea.
Yeah, very good.
So that's our listener mail for today. A little bit of an attempt to answer some questions about cars and the United States relationship with those wonderful vehicles. And it's probably time for the Deuce and I to hit the road now. So if you guys enjoyed the episode, please let us know. If you have any suggestions for an upcoming episode, then please send us an email at highspeedstuff@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com. And be sure to check out the High Speed Stuff blog on the HowStuffWorks.com homepage.